Your line just went down. Production stopped. A supervisor wants answers. And someone's digging through a binder for the maintenance history. Every one of those minutes costs money. And most of the time, that breakdown could have been prevented. That's where MaintainX comes in. MaintainX catches the failure before it happens. Preventative maintenance plans on every key asset to improve reliability. Work orders assigned and tracked right from your phone. Everyone from the floor to the front office is in the loop. Companies on MaintainX have cut unplanned downtime by over 30% and saved thousands on parts and labor every year. See what MaintainX can do for your operation. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Baseball has always been a game of inches. Now, it's also a game of seconds. T-Mobile and MLB have teamed up to bring ABS Challenge to all 29 ballparks across the U.S. This isn't a minor upgrade. This is the most significant new technology in the history of the sport, and it's powered by T-Mobile. With every pitch thrown, ABS Challenge uses real-time precision to verify the call, giving them the support they need. No delays, no guesswork, just accuracy at the speed the game demands. Thanks to ABS Challenge, T-Mobile is helping power the moments that define the game. When performance and reliability are non-negotiable, MLB turns to T-Mobile. That's not a coincidence. That's what happens when the most innovative network in the country powers the most data-driven sport in the world. T-Mobile powers MLB's most ambitious technology, and America's best network powers your connection to baseball, home or away, every pitch, every game, every day. T-Mobile, it's better over here.
Major League Baseball trademarks and copyrights are used with permission of Major League Baseball. Visit MLB.com. T-Mobile, best mobile network in the U.S. according to Ookla speed test, based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, first half 2026. Ookla trademarks used under license and reprinted with permission.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Hello and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH 96.5 TIC. Our guest is Progressive Democratic challenger for governor, Josh Elliott, who's also a Hamden state representative. It's been a while since Josh and I have done an update together, but nonetheless, it's good to have him on the program as we get ready for early voting on Monday, August 3rd, and the primary coming up on August 11th. Josh, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Morgan.
Where is your campaign at this moment in time?
Sure. So, brief snapshot, I'm a five-term state representative, deputy speaker, been doing this work for a decade. Got elected about 2 years before Ned did. I announced my candidacy July of last year, so we are coming up on the 13-month mark. I'm the only challenger against Ned Lamont in the Democratic primary. This is the first Democratic primary against a sitting incumbent in 48 years. We had to do two big things to make sure that we were competitive. We had to, one, get onto the ballot. That was difficult. And two, raise the money, even more difficult. To get onto the ballot, that was in May, we had to get 15% of the 2,000 or so delegates that go to the convention, Hartford. We got well over that. We got 25%. The other bit was the way more difficult bit, and that's having the financing to run our campaign. So we have something in Connecticut called the Citizens Election Program. It's basically public financing grants to allow people like me, who don't come from immense wealth, to be able to run my campaign. So I had to raise $335,000. Now, if you're looking at Ryan Fazio, Malloy, back in the past, they raised about $250,000. I had to raise significantly more because it went up by an inflationary amount because I asked for the money after January of this year. So it went up. We actually raised about $370,000 from people giving between $5 to $340,000. That got us a grant of $3.7 million. So we spent about $300,000 over an 11-month period, and now we're going to spend about $3.7 million over about a four-week period. And that started about 2 weeks ago, which is why people who are listening are probably now just starting to see ads and why they haven't seen it previous. Just like you said, we are about, I think, 10 days away from the August 11th primary date. August 3rd is coming Monday. for a week. We are going to have early voting. Unaffiliated voters will still be able to change their registration to Democrat if they want to vote in this primary. Coming up on the 11th, if you're registered Republican, if you're registered independent, you will not be able to change your registration. And we are seeing the race tighten dramatically. And Ned Lamont is now below 50% in the polls. So we are feeling very good about how things are going.
I want to go back to May for a moment when it was the convention and you had earned about a third, roughly, of delegate support, or just under a third. And that did take a number of people by surprise. You had to get 15% or more in order to qualify to be on the primary ballot, or you'd have to petition your way on. What do you think is your secret sauce in getting to this point?
So the secret sauce is just the work ethic and the message. I'm pretty honest, I think, with myself that this is so much less about me as a candidate and really so much more about the moment that we're in. So I had run for a statewide about 4 years ago for Secretary of the State. And instead of getting 15%, I was around 13%. And my feeling was, could I try to cut deals and get that 15% in a way that, say, Jillian Gilchrist was able to do to make sure that she got on the ballot for the first congressional district? That was something I decided not to do. I wasn't at the money that I needed to be. I wanted to just make friends. I ended up backing the winner in Stephanie Thomas and was able to then move forward. But because of that experience, I built a lot of relationships with Democratic town committee chairs. So we have 169 towns in the state, and in every single town, we have a Democratic town committee and we have a Republican town committee. So my job was to go to as many of these DTCs as I possibly could. And over the course of the campaign, I've been to about 136. I would have been to more, but I wasn't invited into every single one. In fact, I was rejected from a number of them. There was a lot of holding up people's arms and saying, nope, you're not allowed to come and talk to our people. I get it. That's part of the political process. I'm nothing special. It's only ever an ask for me to be in front of people. So I started this tour last year, but really intensely between January through March. There were some nights I was in front of one through four DTCs, and this was every single day during the week. And I just think it was the fact that I was really putting myself out there. In the second congressional district where Joe Courtney is, I was actually winning about 42 to 45% of the delegates that went to convention, because there were a lot of small towns that Ned Lamont has simply never stepped foot in. I was willing to go to every single town. If I could have been to every one, I would have. But a big part of this was just simply being in front of people.
I remember some of the videos that you had put out at one point in time, like in Bridgeport, where you had to more or less fight to get just a few minutes of FaceTime in front of a crowd. One of those scenarios that you were explaining where you weren't always welcomed in, but you were ultimately. But my question is kind of along these lines, Josh. If there's support for the incumbent, there's support for you, the Democrat Party is at this point in time backing Lamont. Is there a division in the Democrat Party right now, and how do you overcome it?
Whenever there's a primary, there's going to be intense feelings and this feeling of division. But what I will say is that I've been very vocal that I will be supporting the Democrat in November, whether or not that's me or Ned Lamont. This is not something that Ned Lamont has said. He is more than welcome to make whatever decisions he wants to make. I am a true blue Democrat. Now, I'm progressive. I'm an economic populist. I want to push our party in the direction of helping working families, fixing a tax structure. But when we say there's division, all we're saying is that we're having hard conversations about what our party stands for, about what the public would like to see our party stand for, about what the public would like to see their elected officials and government work on. And so this is the time to be having those conversations. If you're not doing it during a primary, then you're simply not doing it at all. And as somebody who's been doing this work and worked my way up into leadership over the last 10 years, I can tell you how I see firsthand how well over 85 of the members of our 102-member House Democratic Caucus are left-leaning Democrats who get a number of bills out of committee, things like a permanent and fully refundable child tax credit, tax reform generally, asking the wealthy to pay their fair shares, fully free and universal school meals, talking about a public option, talking about unemployment benefits for striking workers. And these are all things that Governor Ned Lamont is single-handedly killing year after year. Now, the thing is, there are some moderate members of our caucus, too, who don't want to see these things passed. And so we have to make sure that we're having a robust conversation. But we are at a point where so many people have been elected to do a job that they can't do with Ned Lamont. And so my premise for this race is that the state and the population that elects us deserves somebody that reflects their values.
Josh, let's get into some of the issues. And for anybody who's just joining us on Face Connecticut, I'm Morgan Cunningham, and he is Democrat candidate for governor ahead of the primary coming up in just a few, really a few days, and state representative from Hamden, Josh Elliott. Let's talk a little bit about taxes. What do you have proposed for taxes?
Sure. So the important statistic, data point that I want people to really understand where I'm coming from is that the top 4,500 income earners, the wealthiest in our state, pay less than 8% of their income to state and local taxes. The bottom 1.2 million income earners, the neediest in our state, they pay over 20%. It's a differential of nearly 2.5, 3 to 1. And the reason for this is that we're the second most reliant state in the country on the property tax, which is regressive. It's regressive, but it's also a middle class wealth tax. And while billionaires are paying literally no income taxes because of the way that our tax codes are written, people who are working from 9 to 5 are essentially getting taxed on anywhere from 3 to 5% of their overall wealth, because the vast majority of us have the vast majority of what we own stored in our homes as equity. And this is what we use to spend money on police and fire and local transportation, public works, but most importantly, our education system, meaning that the quality and investment of education that you get is dependent on the zip code that you grow up in. Now, other states have figured this out. They have county-based systems. We're one of two states that don't. The way that we fix this is by asking the wealthy to pay their fair share. Now, what this is not class warfare. This is not gouging the rich. This is not going after business owners that are job creators. But the fact is that the ultra wealthy are paying less than half of the rest of us are as a percentage. We have a broken system where we have people that are creating this wealth generationally while people are struggling now. It's not the best use of resources in our state, and it's deeply unfair. So it's less so about closing tax loopholes, because it's not a loophole. This is just the system that we have. So we need to look at what Massachusetts just did recently, a few years ago. They implemented a 4% surcharge on people making $1 million or more. This includes capital gains, dividends, and income. And the thing is, that brought in billions and billions of dollars. What did they use that money for? They sent it back to municipalities to offset the cost of education, bringing down their property taxes, something that we could do here. Right now, we are essentially a tax haven compared to the rest of the Northeast for the ultra wealthy. I think that's a big mistake. We can crow about the fact that we have some of the best investment in education, but if you boil down to those numbers, there's a massive divide between who has access to that education and who doesn't. And my belief is that everybody deserves access to a good education.
There's a situation that played out in the state of New York earlier this year. You might have seen the headline. Governor Kathy Hochul was trying to convince some wealthy New Yorkers who left for, say, Florida to come.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's maintain in the letter X.com/AI.
Baseball has always been a game of inches. Now it's also a game of seconds. T-Mobile and MLB have teamed up to bring ABS Challenge to all 29 ballparks across the U.S. This isn't a minor upgrade. This is the most significant new technology in the history of the sport, and it's powered by T-Mobile. With every pitch thrown, ABS Challenge uses real-time precision to verify the call, giving them the support they need. No delays, no guesswork, just accuracy at the speed the game demands. Thanks to ABS Challenge, T-Mobile is helping power the moments that define the game. When performance and reliability are non-negotiable, MLB turns to T-Mobile. That's not a coincidence. That's what happens when the most innovative network in the country powers the most data-driven sport in the world. T-Mobile powers MLB's most ambitious technology, and America's best network powers your connection to baseball. Home or away, every pitch, every game, every day. T-Mobile, it's better over here.
Major League Baseball trademarks and copyrights are used with permission of Major League Baseball. Visit MLB.com. T-Mobile, best mobile network in the U.S. According to Ookla speed test, based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, first half 2026. Ookla trademarks used under license and reprinted with permission.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Back to New York, how are you so sure that you won't have to make that same kind of plea?
Well, I guess there's a broader question. If we are begging the ultra-wealthy to move in our state, if we're trying to determine what our laws are depending on a few people, that doesn't really sound like democracy to me. We should be angling for a tax code, and people will say a flat tax. Do I believe in a flat tax? No. The progressive tax is meant to offset how regressive every other kind of taxes, whether you're talking about the gas tax, the sales tax, the property tax, the car tax, all these fees and all these fines. That's why you have a progressive income tax, because it's the only thing that offsets how bad all those other taxes are. What I will do is I will make sure that we build houses. We build out our transportation infrastructure so it's quicker and easier to get to New York City. It's possible to get to Boston. We have more rail lines everywhere. By investing in that infrastructure, that is how you get more and more people here. And by investing in education, that's how you build out disposable income, which means that entrepreneurs are more likely to be successful. And as you continue growing this out and you have an educated workforce, you're going to have bigger businesses that come here because they know that they have a base of people that they can then hire from. It's not just throwing money at the ultra wealthy. It's not begging the ultra wealthy to come back. It's building something truly sustainable here and truly equitable because, again, it's about building a culture.
Progressive Democrat challenger for governor Josh Elliott with us this week on Face Connecticut. Josh, shifting to another issue, you have supported kind of more or less diversifying the electric grid in Connecticut as a way to deal with high energy prices, high electric bills, in which more municipal-run grids will exist. Do I have that in a nutshell correct? Or what's your plan specifically on electricity?
Okay. Again, I always want to start with context. Here's the context. Here in Connecticut, we have investor-owned utilities. We have Eversource and we have UI. And they are held in private hands. They have shareholders. And Eversource made $1.69 billion in profit last year. That's important to recognize because it doubled from the year before. Over the course of the 2010s, shareholder returns also doubled. What we are paying for by being one of the most expensive states in the country for energy is simply the profits of these companies. The Eversource CEO makes over $15 million a year, not even including all the stock options and benefits. Okay, that's where we start. Now, across the U.S., 70% of energy is distributed like with Eversource and UI, with IOUs. But 30% is distributed publicly. If you look to Nebraska, Nebraska as a state distributes all of their energy publicly. Really important to know that what I'm talking about is not this insane alien bizarro idea. It's things that we actually do across the U.S. Not only do we do it across the U.S., we do it here in our state. Six towns, including Groton, including Wallingford, they have their own public utility. And what do we know about public utilities across the U.S.? They are 30 to 40% less expensive. Does that take into account here as well? Yes, it does. Now, people will say that's because of the public benefits charge. They are wrong. The public benefits charge is not on those bills. That is true. That is a percentage. That is a portion of what you save. What you're actually saving is not paying for these insane amounts of money going towards profits when you have a culture where, when I first got elected, three Republican senators were on payroll for Eversource. You have Eversource buying up people. The previous Speaker of the House gets paid $50,000 a year and is on WTNH slamming this campaign. You have Democratic Town Committee chairs. You have leaders of the party. The executive director of the party is on payroll. You have mayors, ex-mayors who are on payroll. What Eversource is doing runs very deep. But what I can tell the public is this. You have somebody who's willing to challenge their own governor from their own party, because I recognize that affordability is truly a crisis right now, and I'm willing to take on these fights. Governor Ned Lamont has put out a presser basically saying, well, what he'll do is he'll have smart meters, which essentially blames the consumer for consuming too much. And he will bring Eversource and UI in front of PURA every 15 years to do what? Wag your finger at them? The fact is we need to do a lot more. We need to have a municipal option. And my plan is to allow municipalities to purchase their grid. And if they want to contract out with places like Eversource and UI, that they can maintain the grid if they want. But in terms of raw ownership, that needs to be done by municipalities. That will cut into the profit. And in places where, just again, like Wallingford and Groton, where they have their own municipal power lines and grid, they have fewer brownouts, fewer blackouts, it's cheaper, and everybody's happy because you're looking at the administrators in the face at the grocery store. It's not somebody living in a different state, collecting a paycheck just to gouge us.
As far as implementing this plan goes, Josh, when you look at Connecticut, of course, there are large cities like Hartford. There are bigger suburbs like Glastonbury, but there are also really rural towns, Andover, Brooklyn, North Canaan, just to name a few. Okay. So how does it look when you've got a bigger city that might be able to take on this kind of a plan versus something that's a little more rural where it might be, or at least people would expect it to be, harder or perhaps even inaffordable? How does it look as far as installing more of these across the state? Is it possible and is it financially feasible?
I think that is an excellent question. There's a multiple ways to come at this. So the financial feasibility question is really important, because this is the big hit from Ned Lamont on this campaign. Josh is pie in the sky, talks about these big ideas, but how are you going to pay for it? Billions and billions of dollars. Well, listen, we're not going to do something that doesn't make sense on paper. We're only going to do it if it makes sense on paper. Now, it's really important to know that when I juxtapose things like the Aquarian deal, for example. So this is a sale of Aquarian from Eversource becoming a public-private partnership. And that payout by the public was a massive amount of capital that we sent right to Eversource because we overvalued it. So if you overvalue what you're paying for, you're not going to get your money back. And in places around the country where these efforts have failed, that is what has been happening. But when you value on the front end and write into law that you're going to value by book value, not market value, then you make sure that you protect yourself down the line so you're actually getting a requisite return. Now, how do small towns do this? I'm not going to tell you that they can. And that's why my plan is a public option. It's not a public determinant offer that they have to do. This is saying that if you, as an administrator in the town, feel that you have the bandwidth to do this, then you should be able to do it. You'll use state bonding as a backdrop. You'll have the COG system, which we'll be investing in to make sure that there's expertise. We'll have ways to make sure this can be done regionally if it needs to be done regionally. Now, Maine was going through a similar process a few years ago, and they were looking at a full state takeover. It was 2-1 popular. Everybody in the public wanted this. The governor didn't. And ultimately, the advocates were outspent about $45 million to about $1.5 million. It failed at the polls 2-1. 6 months later, they were asked again. The public said by 2-1 margins, we want public power. The public wants this. What we have to make sure is that the political will exists to make sure that it happens. And that is what I provide to this position.
Just in the interest of time, I want to go over to another issue, and that is on education, Josh. Just a few days ago, the Connecticut Education Association, the largest teachers union in the state, endorsed the incumbent, your opponent, Governor Ned Lamont. And as far as education is concerned, I remember speaking with the CEA president some time ago, maybe a year and a half ago, in which she said that they were going to consider who they're going to be endorsing in this year's race. And part of that was because they were frustrated with how schools were being funded. Now, you're in the legislature, and you know that earlier this year there was an influx of money that was found and sent to schools to help them get through the next budget year. But at the same time, the education cost sharing formula, which has not had its base revised since 2013, but has had, you know, bonuses essentially thrown in recent years at it. That's a big part of their frustration. So I'm not quite sure why they're backing him, because they're unhappy with that system, but they did get some more money. My question to you is, what do you do about education and that particular issue?
Sure, a lot to unpack there. Here's what I'll say about CEA. 99% of the time when you as a candidate fill out a questionnaire, they will proactively reach out to you to schedule an endorsement interview. CEA did not do that. What they did, they sent out an email saying, fill out the questionnaire and then tell us if you want to have an interview. I missed that little verb on the bottom because that is so not part of the norm. And so they actually never had me in front of them even to talk to their e-board or talk to their membership. So when they go through this process but don't actually bring me in, I spend an hour and a half filling out the questionnaire. I just sort of question the process. I'm not salty about it, but I also think it's really important to know that they really bungled the process on this. The other bit is that I was also endorsed by the four C's. These are the college professors across the state at our community colleges. And this is also NHFT, the New Haven Federation of Teachers, also endorsed me, and AFT did not endorse either way. While I'll also say CEA has tons and tons of teachers who've been getting their teachers' positions cut. Look to Enfield. There's about 130 positions in their public school system that got cut last year. The fact is, we know, and the teachers know, that Ned Lamont has been horrific for K through 12 and higher education. He doesn't understand that just because you are spending more than a dollar this year than last year, if you're not matching what the actual costs that we're seeing locally are going up from the state level, that we're going to be over-relying on the property tax. And what that means is that towns and cities have two options. They can either raise their property taxes, they can cut teachers' positions, or they can do a combination of both. And what we're seeing in Norwalk, in Enfield, in Hartford, in New Haven, across the state, is we are gutting our education system. This is due to one person and one person alone. That is Governor Ned Lamont. This is not hyperbole. When Ned Lamont says he's given the middle class the biggest tax cut they've ever seen, he's talking about a rate of 5% to 4.5% at one of those middle marginal income tax rates. But what he ignores is the fact that we have been historically depriving our municipalities of billions and billions of dollars. So when you get your property tax bill, know that it is going up because of Ned Lamont. Now, you look to the actual funding of our education system, and we know that the ECS formula per pupil funding hasn't gone up in the last 13 years. Now, what happens? Places like Branch, with a mill rate of 11, can subsume those costs. They never have a problem. But places like Waterbury, New Haven, and Bridgeport, places that don't really have the taxable base, because what is happening in these urban centers? You have religious institutions, hospitals, educational facilities, government buildings, nonprofits generally that don't have taxable property. So you have these massive swaths of land that are untaxable. And so the state does not give enough resources back. And that is what we're seeing over and over and over, that people are struggling. And Ned Lamont just does not understand that he is the sole reason this is happening.
Josh, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts? I know there's more we could talk about, but anything that we didn't get to that you want to get to?
No, what I would say is this, is that I have a true recognition that people are struggling. Every time I'm running for office, I'm hitting at least 5,000 doors. And what that told me is I have a broad array of knowledge of how people are feeling and how they're doing over the course of time. And the fact is that more and more people are struggling as more and more people cement massive generational wealth. And the thing is that we have the ability to help people here. Last year, we saw HR 1 pass, which was a massive giveaway to millionaires and billionaires. We know disproportionately they live in our state. For us to say that we can't help people in this time of need is factually inaccurate. What we need is the will, and that is why I am running.
Josh, this was just supposed to be a broad overview, but I'm sure we'll talk again. I appreciate your time on Face Connecticut.
You tell me when you want me in, I'll be in again.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
Your line just went down. Production stopped. A supervisor wants answers. And someone's digging through a binder for the maintenance history. Every one of those minutes costs money. And most of the time, that breakdown could have been prevented. That's where MaintainX comes in. MaintainX catches the failure before it happens. Preventative maintenance plans on every key asset to improve reliability. Work orders assigned and tracked right from your phone. Everyone from the floor to the front office is in the loop. Companies on MaintainX have cut unplanned downtime by over 30% and saved thousands on parts and labor every year. See what MaintainX can do for your operation. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Baseball has always been a game of inches. Now, it's also a game of seconds. T-Mobile and MLB have teamed up to bring ABS Challenge to all 29 ballparks across the U.S. This isn't a minor upgrade. This is the most significant new technology in the history of the sport, and it's powered by T-Mobile. With every pitch thrown, ABS Challenge uses real-time precision to verify the call, giving them the support they need. No delays, no guesswork, just accuracy at the speed the game demands. Thanks to ABS Challenge, T-Mobile is helping power the moments that define the game. When performance and reliability are non-negotiable, MLB turns to T-Mobile. That's not a coincidence. That's what happens when the most innovative network in the country powers the most data-driven sport in the world. T-Mobile powers MLB's most ambitious technology, and America's best network powers your connection to baseball, home or away, every pitch, every game, every day. T-Mobile, it's better over here.
Major League Baseball trademarks and copyrights are used with permission of Major League Baseball. Visit MLB.com. T-Mobile, best mobile network in the U.S., according to Ookla speed test. Based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, first half 2026. Ookla trademarks used under license and reprinted with permission.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.